All right, here we are. Jerome Powell has just announced, as expected, no interest rate hike. The Fed FOMC statements are out. Bitcoin doing better than it was this morning, but certainly not doing very well. 57,598. We're going to look at the, we're going to watch the press conference here live. We're going to talk about potential scenarios for Bitcoin. We're going to talk about potential scenarios for the altcoins. If you have been watching the dominance in the last hour or so, the dominance has started to shoot down, which means that there's some reprieve for altcoins. This little dump here, it means that there's some reprieve for altcoins. Also, you know that I've been talking a lot about the stochastic RSIs. And I said to you, if we look, we've got to look at the stochastic RSIs on the weekly. And you can see that the stochastic RSIs are now below 20 on the weekly, which means that Bitcoin is now in the buy area. Now, the big question is, what is Powell going to say next? I'm going to tell you what we already know. We're going to watch the press together. We're going to watch the charts together. I've got a Lord of Entry here with me. The Lord of Entry knows how to enter, doesn't know how to exit. At least that's what his wife says. So we've got him here with us. We got beautiful Paolo driving in the backstage. Paolo, welcome, welcome, welcome. We got the beautiful fam here, guys. Let's do this. Let's do this. Let's do this. Someone says Ryan's been eating loads of gum yesterday. Okay, let me explain to you what I've been doing. It took me 26 hours to fly from Cape Town to Miami, and I'm finally in sunny Miami. I got to the hotel in sunny Miami. What do I do? First thing I do, I arrive, I set up a laptop, and I bring you guys the live fucking FOMC. Didn't even shave. Didn't even get to shave. I mean, I did get to shower. So listen, what I need you to do is to smash the like button, destroy the like button. And if you're not already subscribed to this channel, then please leave the stream. This is a stream which is only for subscribers, only for subscribers. These special streams are only for subscribers. They're also for friends and family who we haven't seen from a long time, who's definitely rolling a blunt. He doesn't even know we're watching him, but you can see that he's 100%. Oh, you see, are you rolling a blunt there, bro? Is that what you're doing, eh? We can't hear you, bro. You're muted. You're muted.
Time to focus.
Gotta be focused. All right, guys, smash the like button. Let's get everybody in here. Let's talk about what we already know. So quickly, let's talk about what we already know. First thing we know that Jerome Powell left rates unchanged. Surprise, I specifically said that he's going to leave rates unchanged. What we also know, so there's a few other things that we already know. So six straight meetings of the Fed leaving rates unchanged. Rate cuts not appropriate until greater confidence that inflation is heading to 2%. So not is at 2%. It's heading to 2%. Fed notes lack of further progress towards 2% inflation goal. Fed to slow pace of balance sheet runoff. This is good. This is good. Inflation has eased but remains elevated. Job market gains have remained strong. Higher for longer is officially okay. So I want to just show you this because I think I tweeted about 2 days ago. And I said to you guys, look, I'll be on a plane because I thought I was still going to be on the plane. And I said to you guys, when Jerome Powell actually speaks, this is what he's going to say. Wow, I've tweeted a lot since then. So here we go. I said, dear markets, on Wednesday, Jerome Powell will speak at the presser. He will say, they're holding rates where they are. Tick. Inflation is still under 2% and seems to be a slight rise. Tick. They will need data to show that the inflation is coming down before they can reduce rate. Tick. They will deploy a data-driven approach. You're about to hear that. Whilst the economy is slowing a bit, unemployment is still low, too low. That's exactly what he says. So Fed, from Walter Bloomberg, FOMC, Fed flags lack of further progress towards inflation target in recent months. FOMC is strongly committed to reducing inflation to 2%. Now, let's look at the probabilities of rate cuts going forward. So what are the probabilities of rate cuts going forward? Let's look at the probabilities. I think only one rate hike now on the cards. I don't even think we'll get that rate hike. I don't even think we'll get that rate hike. Let's read the Fed statement. It says, recent indicators suggest that the economic activity has continued expanding at a solid pace. So instead of has been, he has continued to expand. Job gains have remained strong and unemployment rate has remained low. Inflation has eased over the past year, but remains elevated. In the recent 2 months, there's been a lack of further progress towards the committee's 2% inflation objective. The committee seeks to achieve maximum employment and inflation at the rate of 2%. The committee judges that the risks in achieving its employment and inflation goals have moved towards better balance over the past year. The economic outlook is uncertain. The committee remains highly attentive to risks. Then he says, beginning in June, the committee will slow the pace of decline on its securities holdings by reducing the monthly redemption from 60 billion to 25 billion. That means that they're going to take money out of the system slower, which is good. The committee will maintain the monthly cap on agency debt and agency mortgage-backed security. So basically, that's probably the only bullish part. So what happened? Bitcoin, slight recovery from the lows. Let's look at a couple of other indices. Let's look at the Dixie, because the Dixie is an important one to watch when these FOMCs happen. So we have the Dixie. So the Dixie was at 106.5, now back at 106.1. So the Dixie responding accordingly. Let's look at the U.S. 10-year Treasury yield. Let's look at the U.S. 10-year Treasury yield. Also, a dip in the U.S. 10-year Treasury yield. So we could get a slightly hawkish pile. We could get a slightly dovish pile. I did say earlier when I was tweeting, I said I was on the plane and
promise.
We'll watch this. I did say earlier on the plane, I said, I think that the FOMC might actually turn markets. I think that there's been a lot of blood in markets. And I think that there is a chance that the FOMC will actually turn a market, turn the markets. Guys, if you are in Miami, Florida, South Beach, and you want to come and watch the best debate, the biggest Bitcoin debate in history with Peter Schiff and Nuri Robini against Eric Fuhrjes and Anthony Scaramucci, there are one or two tickets available, but they're heavy hitter tickets. They're heavy hitter tickets. Paolo, just ask Dan to put the link in the description for us so people can sign up. The tickets are like $10,000. So it's only for like really heavy hitters. So if you want to have dinner with Eric, with Eric Scaramucci, who's not going to be there, Nuri Albini and Peter Schiff and me and the guys from Zero Hedge, feel free to join us. Mr. Lord of Entry, what are you seeing in the charts, sir? What are you seeing in the charts? I've given you guys a breakdown of what we're seeing. Guys, there's only 5,000 of us here. Let's smash the like button. Let's get everybody here. Let's go crazy. Obliterate this place. Lord of Entry, over to you with the chart, sir.
So, yeah, I mean, it's been an interesting week. A lot of us were calling this 59K bounce. Twitter was full of it. I was full of it, too. I was looking for a little fake out under 59K and a little pump. And they gave us a 3% move, like a courtesy move yesterday. And then they came and really taught us a lesson, especially the leverage traders. We got slapped around in the last 12 hours. But my show today was all about a bounce that I was looking for. And, leading into this FOMC, we like to see a bit of blood. So it's always a little bit of a bullish vibe if we're getting a bleed out into the FOMC. I normally get a little bit excited. So I'm hoping Powell is going to come and really save us now. And the market, as you can see on this 15-minute, they're pushing here. So maybe they're anticipating something.
I do think that the FOMC brings us a bounce. I do think the FOMC brings us a bounce. I won't lie to you. We are going to cross over to Powell as soon as Powell comes on. He's going to be on. Actually, he's on. He's on right now. So we're going to cross over to Powell right now. Dylan, we're going to watch the charts. So let's go straight through to Jerome Powell and listen to what he has to say.
What up, pussies? Happy FOMC day to all who celebrate it. I know nobody really knows what FOMC means, but it's provocative. It gets the people going. Me and the team have been getting creative about how we make a pump in the economy, and we have found the best solution out there. Do you know what a discount window is? Let me say it in language that you plebs might understand. The money printer goes burr. The phrase quantitative easing gets thrown around a lot, but we feel like we have a better name. Quantitative squeezing. While we might be easing conditions for the banks, aka our best, most important citizens, the effect for the little guys, you, is more of a squeezing. A squeezing of your wallet, your purchasing power, and of course, your living standards. We are grateful for you all taking a hefty cut in your quality of life to prop up these precious banks. Let's face it, it would be downright disrespectful to let bankers pay for any mistakes they've made to ruin the economy. A world without bankers is a world without oxygen. That's what I tell everybody. So here's to you guys out there making sacrifices so that our financial system can continue to trickle down wealth to the people. And yes, it is working. We promise it will get to you eventually. Some say the Fed is steering a sinking ship and you need to secure yourself a life raft. No, not that expensive.
We're going to have to cross over to the real Jerome Powell. Others are going to miss the real presser. That's the courtesy of Jerome Powell. Jerome Powell. Okay, so we are waiting for Jerome Powell. I think he's on now. Should be on any minute. Let's quickly just go and see what's going on here. Okay, he should be on. So here we go. He's coming in. He's coming into the room. We're going to try and watch it with the charts as we do always, but I am traveling, so it might be a little bit more tricky to get the screens to do what we want them to do, but we will do it. Okay, so here we have that screen. And over here, we should have the Bitcoin chart on the 3 minute. Okay, let's do that. So that's a Bitcoin chart on the 3 minute. Okay. That's the Bitcoin chart on the 3 minute.
My colleagues and I remain squarely focused on our dual mandate to promote maximum employment and stable prices for the American people. The economy has made considerable progress toward our dual mandate objectives. Inflation has eased substantially over the past year, while the labor market has remained strong. And that's very good news. But inflation is still too high. Further progress in bringing it down is not assured, and the path forward is uncertain. We are fully committed to returning inflation to our 2% goal. Restoring price stability is essential to achieve a sustainably strong labor market that benefits all. Today, the FOMC decided to leave our policy interest rate unchanged and to continue to reduce our securities holdings, though at a slower pace. Our restrictive stance of monetary policy has been putting downward pressure on economic activity and inflation, and the risks to achieving our employment and inflation goals have moved toward better balance over the past year. However, in recent months, inflation has shown a lack of further progress toward our 2% objective, and we remain highly attentive to inflation risks. I'll have more to say about monetary policy after briefly reviewing economic developments. Recent indicators suggest that economic activity has continued to expand at a solid pace. Although GDP growth moderated from 3.4% in the fourth quarter of last year to 1.6% in the first quarter, private domestic final purchases, which excludes inventory, investment, government spending, and net exports, and usually sends a clearer signal on underlying demand, was 3.1% in the first quarter, as strong as the second half of 2023. Consumer spending has been robust over the past several quarters, even as high interest rates have weighed on housing and equipment investment. Improving supply conditions have supported resilient demand and the strong performance of the U.S. economy over the past year. The labor market remains relatively tight, but supply and demand conditions have come into better balance. Payroll job gains averaged 276,000 jobs per month in the first quarter, while the unemployment rate remains low at 3.8%. Strong job creation over the past year has been accompanied by an increase in the supply of workers, reflecting increases in participation among individuals aged 25 to 54 years and a continued strong pace of immigration. Nominal wage growth has eased over the past year and the jobs to workers gap has narrowed, but labor demand still exceeds the supply.
If you're wondering what we're watching, it's Powell over here. It's the banter bubbles on the 1 minute chart over here. It's the Dixie over here and Bitcoin price over here.
Total PCE prices rose 2.7%
that he is going to pump the Bitcoin price.
Excluding the volatile food and energy categories, core PCE prices rose 2.8%. The inflation data received so far this year have been higher than expected. Although some measures of short-term inflation expectations have increased in recent months, longer-term inflation expectations appear to remain well anchored, as reflected in a broad range of surveys of households, businesses, and forecasters, as well as measures from financial markets. The Fed's monetary policy actions are guided by our mandate to promote maximum employment and stable prices for the American people. My colleagues and I are acutely aware that high inflation imposes significant hardship as it erodes purchasing power. especially for those least able to meet the higher costs of essentials like food,
Come on, Bitcoin.
Transportation. We are strongly committed to returning inflation to our 2% objective. The committee decided at today's meeting to maintain the target range for the federal funds rate at 5.25% to 5.5%, and to continue the process of significantly reducing our securities holdings, though at a slower pace. Over the past year, as labor market tightness has eased and inflation has declined, the risks to achieving our employment and inflation goals have moved toward better balance. The economic outlook is uncertain, however, and we remain highly attentive to inflation risks. We've stated that we do not expect that it will be appropriate to reduce the target range for the federal funds rate until we have gained greater confidence that inflation is moving sustainably toward 2%. So far this year, the data have not given us that greater confidence. In particular, and as I noted earlier, readings on inflation have come in above expectations. It is likely that gaining such greater confidence will take longer than previously expected. We are prepared to maintain the current target range for the federal funds rate for as long as appropriate. We're also prepared to respond to an unexpected weakening in the labor market. We know that reducing policy restraint too soon or too much could result in a reversal of the progress we've seen on inflation. At the same time, reducing policy restraint too late or too little could unduly weaken economic activity and employment. In considering any adjustments to the target range for the federal funds rate, the committee will carefully assess incoming data, the evolving outlook, and the balance of risks. Policy is well positioned to deal with the risks and uncertainties that we face in pursuing both sides of our dual mandate. We will continue to make decisions meeting by meeting. Turning to our balance sheet, the committee decided at today's meeting to slow the pace of decline in our securities holdings, consistent with the plans we released previously. Specifically, the cap on Treasury redemptions will be lowered from the current $60 billion per month to $25 billion per month as of June 1. Consistent with the committee's intention to hold primarily Treasury securities in the longer run, we're leaving the cap on agency securities unchanged per month, and we will reinvest any proceeds in excess of this cap in Treasury securities. With principal payments on agency securities currently running at about $15 billion per month, total portfolio runoff will amount to roughly $40 billion per month. The decision to slow the pace of runoff does not mean that our balance sheet will ultimately shrink by less than it would otherwise, but rather allows us to approach its ultimate level more gradually. In particular, slowing the pace of runoff will help ensure a smooth transition, reducing the possibility that money markets experience stress and thereby facilitating the ongoing decline in our securities holdings that are consistent with reaching the appropriate level of ample reserves. We remain committed to bringing inflation back down to our 2% goal and to keeping longer-term inflation expectations well anchored. Restoring price stability is essential to set the stage for achieving maximum employment and stable prices over the longer run. To conclude, we understand that our actions affect communities, families, and businesses across the country. Everything we do is in service to our public mission. We at the Fed will do everything we can to achieve our maximum employment and price stability goals. Thank you. I look forward to your questions.
All right, Gina.
Thank you. Howard Schneider with Reuters. A question to follow up, if I could. Do you consider the current policy rate still, are you confident that it's sufficiently restrictive to get inflation back to 2%?
He's asking if there could be a rate hike.
I think the evidence shows, you know, pretty clearly that policy is restrictive and is weighing on demand. And there are a few places I would point to for that. You can start with the labor market. So demand is still strong, the demand side of the labor market in particular. But it's cooled from its extremely high level of a couple of years ago. And you see that in job openings. You saw it, more evidence of that today in the JOLTS report, as you'll know. It's still higher than pre-pandemic, but it has been coming down both in the Indeed report and in the JOLTS report. That's demand cooling. The same is true of quits and hiring rates, which have essentially normalized. I also surveys of workers and businesses and ask, workers, are jobs plentiful? And ask businesses, are workers plentiful? Is it easy to find workers? And you've seen that the answers to those have come back down to pre-pandemic levels. You also see in no rate hikes. Spending yes. like housing and investment. You also see that BTC higher interest rates are weighing on those activities. So I do think it's clear that that policy is restrictive.
Sufficiently restrictive, I guess.
So I would say that we believe it is restrictive, and we believe over time it will be sufficiently restrictive. That will be a question that that the data will have to answer.
So as a follow-up, if inflation continues running roughly sideways as it has been, the job market stays reasonably strong, unemployment low, and expectations are anchored and maintained, would you disrupt that for...
Expectations are not anchored.
Are anchored. Stable, roughly. Would you disrupt that for the last half point on PCE?
You know, I don't want to get into complicated hypotheticals, but I would say that, you know, we're committed to retaining our current restrictive stance of policy for as long as is appropriate, and we'll do that.
Gina.
Hi, Gina, kids. Gina.
Thanks for taking our questions, Chair Powell. I wonder, you know, obviously, Michelle Bowman has been saying that there is a risk that rates may need to increase further, although it's not her baseline outlook. I wonder if you see that as a risk as well. And if so, what change in conditions would merit considering raising rates
Bitcoin.
At this point?
So I think it's unlikely that the next policy rate move will be a hike. I'd say it's unlikely.
Unlikely there's a hike.
Know, our That's policy just, focus is go. Really what go. I just mentioned, which is how long to keep policy restrictive. You ask, what would it take? You know, I think we'd need to see persuasive evidence that our policy stance is not sufficiently restrictive to bring inflation sustainably down to 2% over time. That's not what we think we're seeing, as I mentioned. But that's something like that is what it would take. We'd look at the totality of the data answer to that question. That would include inflation expectations, and all the other data, too.
Would that be like a reacceleration in inflation?
Well, I think, again, the test, what I'm saying is if we were to come to that conclusion that policy weren't tight enough to achieve that. So it would be the totality of all the things we'd be looking at. It could be expectations. It could be a combination of things. But if we reach that conclusion and we don't see evidence supporting that conclusion, that's what it would take, I think, for us to take that step.
Chris.
thank you, Chris Rugaber at Associated Press. You didn't mention the idea that rates are at a peak for the cycle, and didn't mention the idea that it might be appropriate to cut rates later this year, as you have at previous press conferences. So has the Fed sort of dropped its easing bias? Where are you standing on that?
So on, let me address cuts. So obviously, our decisions that we make on our policy rate are going to depend on the incoming data, how the outlook is evolving, and the balance of risks, as always. And we'll look at the totality of the data. So I think, and we think, that policy is well positioned to address different paths that the economy might take. And we've said that we don't think it would be appropriate to dial back our restrictive policy stance until we've gained greater confidence that inflation is moving down sustainably toward 2%. So, for example, let me take a path. If we did have a path where inflation proves more persistent than expected and where the labor market remains strong, but inflation is moving sideways and we're not gaining greater confidence, well, that would be a case in which it could be appropriate to hold off on rate cuts. I think there's also other paths that the economy could take which would cause us to want to consider rate cuts. And those would be two of those paths would be that we do gain greater confidence, as we've said, that inflation is moving sustainably down to 2%. And another path could be, you know, an unexpected weakening in the labor market, for example. So those are paths in which you could see us cutting rates. So I think it really will depend on the data. In terms of peak rate, you know, I think really it's the same question. I think the data will have to answer that question for us.
Well, and could you just follow on the path where you might not cut? Is that you mentioned that it would be inflation persistent? I mean, is inflation, would that be the key data in making that decision, or could you expand a bit more on that? Thank you.
Again, it's we've set ourselves a test that for us to begin to reduce policy restriction, we'd want to be confident that inflation is moving sustainably down to 2%. And for sure, one of the things we'd be looking at is the performance of inflation. We'd also be looking at inflation expectations. We'd be looking at the whole story, but clearly incoming inflation data would be at the very heart of that decision.
Nick Timiraos of the Wall Street Journal. Chair Powell, to what extent has the easing in financial conditions since November contributed to the reacceleration in growth? And do you now expect a period of sustained tighter financial conditions will be needed to resume the sort of disinflation the economy saw last year?
So I think it's hard to know that. I think we'll be able to look back, you know, from down the road and look back and understand it better. You know, if you look at, let's look at growth. Really, what we've seen so far this year in the first quarter is growth coming in about consistent with where it was last year. I know GDP came in lower, but you don't see an acceleration in growth. I mean, the thought would be that financial conditions loosened in December, and that caused an uptick in activity, and that caused inflation. Presumably, that's what we're tightening in the labor market. You don't really see that happening. What you see is economic activity
at
a level that's roughly the same as last year. So, you know, what's causing this inflation, you know, we'll have a better sense of that over time. I don't know that there's an obvious connection there, though, with the easing of financial conditions. In terms of tightening, you're right. I mean, rates are certainly higher now and have been for some time than they were before the December meeting. And they're higher, and that's tighter financial conditions. And, you know, that's appropriate given what inflation has done in the first quarter.
You've said in the past that stronger growth wouldn't necessarily preclude rate cuts. I wonder, would continued strength in the labor market change your view about the appropriate stance of policy if it was accompanied by signs that wage growth was reaccelerating?
So I just want to be careful that we don't target wage growth or the labor market. And remember what we saw last year, very strong growth, a really tight labor market, and a historically fast decline in inflation. So and that's because we know there are two forces at work here. There's the unwinding of the pandemic related supply side distortions and demand side distortions. And there's also monetary policy, you know, restrictive monetary policy. So I wouldn't rule out that something like that can continue. You know, I wouldn't give up at this point on further things happening on the supply side either, because, you know, we do see that that companies still report that there are supply side issues that they're facing. And also, even when the supply side issues are solved, it should take some time for that to affect economic activity and ultimately inflation. So there are still those things. So I don't like to say that either strong either growth or a strong labor market in and of itself would automatically create problems on inflation, because of course it didn't do that last year. You ask about wages. We also don't target wages. We target price inflation. It is one of the inputs. The point with wages is, of course, we like everyone else like to see high wages, but we also want to see them not eaten up by high inflation. And that's really what we're trying to do is to cool the economy and work with what's happening on the supply side to bring the economy back to 2% inflation. And part of that will probably be having wage increases move down incrementally toward levels that are more sustainable.
Rachel. Hi, Chair Powell. Rachel Siegel from The Washington Post. Thanks for taking our questions. You talked about needing time to gain more confidence that inflation is sustainably moving back down to 2%. It's May now. Do you have time this year to cut three times, just given the calendar?
Yeah, I'm not really thinking of it that way. You know, what we've said is that we need to be more confident. And we've said, my colleagues and I today said, that we didn't see progress in the first quarter. And I've said that it appears then that it's going to take longer for us to reach that point of confidence. So I don't know how long it'll take. I can just say that when we get that confidence, then rate cuts will be in scope. And I don't know exactly when that will be.
And with hindsight, are there any signs that you can look back on now, looking at the reports from January or February or March, that suggested something more worrying than just expected bumpiness?
I, you know, not really. You know, what So I thought it was appropriate to reserve judgment until we had the full quarter's data, until we saw the March data. And so take a step back. What do we now see in the first quarter? We see strong economic activity. We see a strong labor market, and we see inflation. We see three inflation readings. And you, so I think you're at a point there where you should take some signal. We don't like to react to 1 or 2 months data, but this is a full quarter, and I think it's appropriate to take signal now, and we are taking signal. And the signal that we're taking is that it's likely to take longer for us to gain confidence that we are on a sustainable path down to 2% inflation. That's the signal that we're taking, you know.
Steve.
Mr. Chairman, if I could, Steve Leisman, CNBC, if I could follow up on that, what particular areas were sort of temporary or blips in the inflation data in the first quarter, and what's the dynamic by which you expect them to work out in the coming months and quarters?
Yeah, so we will, you know, we will put the thing, we have put the thing under a microscope. I will say nothing is going to come out of that that's going to change the view, I think, that in fact we didn't gain confidence and that it's going to take longer to get that confidence. But confidence, I just think, you know the story, what's happened since December is you've seen higher goods inflation than expected, and you've seen higher non-housing services inflation than expected. And those two are working together to sort of be higher than we had thought. And there are stories behind how that happened. And, you know, I think my expectation is that we will, over the course of this year, see inflation move back down. That's my forecast.
Bullish.
I think my confidence in that is lower than it was because of the data that we've seen. So, we're looking at those things. We also continue to expect, and I continue to expect, that housing services inflation, given where market rents are, those will show up in measured housing services inflation over time. We believe that it will. It looks like that there are substantial lags between when lower market rates turned up and for new tenants, and when it shows up for existing tenants or for in housing services. So,
if I could just follow up, is there a bit of a contradiction in the idea that you are reducing quantitative tightening, which is sort of an easing, while you're holding rates steady at a restrictive rate to try to slow and cool the economy and inflation? Thank you.
No, I wouldn't say that. No, I mean the active tool of monetary policy is, of course, interest rates, and this is a plan we've long had in place to slow, really not in order to provide accommodation to the economy, but to be less restrictive to the economy. It really is to ensure that the process of shrinking the balance sheet down to where we want to get it is a smooth one and doesn't wind up with financial market turmoil the way it did the last time we did this, and the only other time we've ever done this.
Craig Torres from Bloomberg. Two questions. First, simple one. Given the run of data since March, has the probability in your mind cuts this year increased or stayed the same? That's the first question.
Cooking.
Second question. Chair Powell, you joined the board in 2012, and I'm sure you remember, as I do, what the jobless recovery was like. Lawyers, accountants, all kinds of highly qualified people who couldn't get jobs. And given your history there, I wonder if there's an argument for being more patient with inflation here. We have strong productivity growth that's helping wages
the
grow up,
the only one that to
go
at.
Up. We have good employment. And so there's a lot of hysteria about inflation. I agree. It's, you know, nobody likes it. But is there an argument for being patient and working with the economic cycle to get it down over time? Thank you.
So on your first question, I don't have a probability estimate for you. But all I can say is that, we said that we didn't think it'd be appropriate to cut until we were more confident that inflation was moving sustainably at 2%. We didn't get our confidence in that didn't increase in the first quarter. And in fact, what really happened was we came to the view that it will take longer to get that confidence. And I think the economy has been very hard for forecasters broadly to predict its path. But there are paths to not cutting, and there are paths to cutting. It's really going to depend on the data. In terms of the employment mandate, to your point, if you go back a couple of years, our sort of framework document says that when you look at the two mandate goals, and if one of them is further away from goal,
look at the hourly the other, and the
then you focus on that one. It actually it's the time to get back there, times the you know, times how far it is from the goal, and that was clearly inflation. So our focus was very much on inflation, as and this is what we referred to in the statement. As as inflation has come down now to below 3% on a 12-month basis, it's become we're now focusing the other goal, the employment goal, now comes back in to focus, and so we are focusing on it. And that's how we think about that.
Claire. Claire Jones, Financial Times. Thanks a lot for the opportunity to ask the questions. Just to go back to the answer before the previous one, it seemed to suggest that you think the likeliest path of inflation is one that's going to allow you to have a situation where rates are lower at the end of the year than they are right now. It'd be good if you could just confirm whether or not that's a correct reading. And the Q1 GDP print has led to some to start mentioning the term stagflation with respect to the US economy. Do you or anyone else on the FOMC think this is now a risk? Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Dixie's been coming down nicely.
I'm not dealing really in likelihoods. I think there are paths that the economy can take that would involve cuts, in their paths that wouldn't. And I don't have great confidence in which of those paths. I think my personal forecast is that we will begin to see further progress on inflation this year. I don't know that it will be enough sufficient. I don't know that it won't. I think we're going to have to let the data lead us on that. In terms of your question, your second question was stagflation. I guess I would say I was around for stagflation. And it was, 10% unemployment. It was high single digits inflation.
This is good.
Right now we have,
because everyone's scared of stagflation,
very slow growth. So right now we have 3% growth, which is pretty solid growth, I would say, by any measure. And we have inflation running under 3%. So
someone says he was around.
I
really
understand
depression.
Where that's coming from. In addition, I would say, most forecasters, including our forecasting, was that that last year's level of growth was very high, 3.4% in, I guess, the fourth quarter, and probably not going to be sustained and would come down. But that would be our forecast. That wouldn't be stagflation. That would still be to a very healthy level of growth. And of course, with inflation, we will return inflation to 2%. And that won't be so. I don't see the stag or the flation, actually.
So no stagflation, no interest rate increases. This is amazing. This is amazing, guys.
Michael McKee from Bloomberg Radio and Television. The vice chair of the FOMC said recently that he's willing to consider the idea that potential growth has moved up. And of course, he's Mr. Potential Growth, our star. Do you share that view? And would that imply that maybe policy isn't tight enough?
I think I would take that question this way. We saw a year of very high productivity growth in 2023, and we saw a year of, I think, negative productivity growth in 2022. So I think it's hard to draw from the data. The question is, will productivity run? There are two questions. One is, will productivity run, persistently above its longer run trend? I don't think we know that. In terms of potential output, though, if that's a separate question, we've had what amounts to a.
You know what they say? They say sex is good, but have you ever heard Powell being dovish?
It was about having more labor, frankly, both through in 2023, both through participation, also through immigration. So we're very much like other forecasters and economists, getting our arms around what that means for potential output this year and next year. And last year, for that matter, too. So I think in that case, I think you really do have a significant increase in potential output. But you've also got more supply, But those people also come in, and they work, they have jobs, they spend. So you've also got demand. So it may be that you get more supply than you get demand at the beginning, but ultimately it should be neither inflationary nor disinflationary over a longer period.
Davish, bro.
I said earlier that at this point you're not really considering rate increases.
That's what took
if growth is higher, but you're not considering rate increases. Does that imply that you're more worried about causing the economy to slow too much than are about
Tucker knows.
Our policy stance is in a good place and is appropriate to the current situation.
Whoa!
We believe it's restrictive, and you know we are.
Show me Gummy.
Earlier, you see it in the labor market. You see it in inflation-sensitive spending, where demand has clearly come down a lot over the past few years, and that's more from monetary policy. Whereas the supply side things that are happening are more on the
going to the 4 hour.
So, is this sustainable? Do you think?
Gummy.
Or we just. No, not Gummy.
Ed Lawrence from Fox Business. So GDP growth is about 2%. Employment is about 4%. It feels a lot like a steady state, and we have 3% inflation. So if the data remains the same that you're seeing, and I know you said you don't see a rate hike, but it stands to reason that you would need a rate hike to get from 3% to 2% inflation. So was there any discussion about a rate hike in today's meeting? Are you satisfied with 3% inflation for the rest of the year?
That's not a lot.
Of course, we're not satisfied with 3% inflation. 3% can't be in a sentence with satisfied.
Looking at 49K.
The stance is appropriate to do that. So
local bottom.
If we were to conclude that policy is not sufficiently restrictive to bring inflation sustainably down to 2%, then that would be what it would take for us to want to increase rates. We don't see that. We don't see evidence for that. So that's where we are.
Was there a discussion about a rate hike at all?
So the policy focus has really been on what to do holding the current. The current level of restriction. That's part of the policy. That's where the policy discussion was in the meeting.
Yeah, I wanted to follow on the 3%. Is there a time frame of persistent inflation that would trigger a rate hike?
There isn't any rule.
They're probing him on a rate hike. He keeps saying no. He's ruling out rate hikes, which is good. He's ruling out rate hikes, which is very, very good. He's ruling out stagflation, which is very, very good.
What we're seeing. How long that will take and how patient we should be, it's going to depend on the totality of the data, how the outlook evolves.
Victoria. Hi, Victoria Guida with Politico. You've talked about your commitment to being apolitical and nonpartisan, and I was just wondering, given that it's an election year, is the bar for rate changes higher close to an election? And similarly, is there a significant economic difference between starting to cut in, say, September versus December?
So we're always going to do what we think the right thing for the economy is when we come to that consensus view that it's the right thing to do for the economy. That's our record. That's what we do. We're not looking at anything else. It's hard enough to get the economics right here. These are difficult things. And if we were to take on a whole nother set of factors and use that as a new filter, it would reduce the likelihood we'd actually get the economics right. So that's how we think about it around here. And, we're at peace over it. We know that we'll do what we think is the right thing when we think it's the right thing. And we'll all do that. And that's how everybody around here thinks. So I can't say it enough that we just don't go down that road. If you go down that road, where do you stop? And we're not on that road. We're on the road where we're serving all the American people and making our decisions based on the data and how those data affect the outlook and the balance of risks.
And then is there a significant difference between, whether you start in, say, September versus December?
There's a significant difference between an institution that takes into account all sorts of political events and one that doesn't. That's where the significant difference is. We just don't do that. I mean, you can go back and read the transcripts forever.
Go Tucker.
Fourth presidential election here. Read all the transcripts and see if anybody mentions in any way the pending election. It just isn't part of our thinking. It's not what we're hired to do. if we start down that road, I don't know how you stop. So
big resistance.
Thank you, Chair Powell. Question about the labor market. You've mentioned a few times that the labor market is normalizing. Certainly today's JOLTS data suggested that things are kind of getting back to pre-pandemic levels. One thing that hasn't normalized is wage growth, which is still quite a bit stronger than before the pandemic. I wonder if you can share your analysis of why that's happening. Is it a lagging indicator or something else going on?
So I think if you go back to where wages peaked, wage increases peaked a couple, 3 years ago, essentially all wage measures have come down substantially to that. But they are not down to where they were before the pandemic. They're still roughly a percentage point higher. And we've seen pretty consistent progress, but not uniformly. And you'll note the ECI reading from Tuesday was expected to have come down, and essentially it was flat year over year, I think, roughly. So, yeah, I mean, it's that part of it is bumpy. And again, we don't target wage increases, but it, you know, in the longer run, if you have wage increases running higher than productivity would warrant, and then you know there will be inflationary pressures. Employers will raise prices over time if that's the case. So we've seen progress. It has been inconsistent, but we have seen a substantial decline overall. But we have ways to go on that.
Scott. Nancy. Sorry. So far, so good, guys. So far, very, 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 very fucking good results.
Consumers, and consumers are feeling the weight of interest rates right now. Mortgage rates are up, as are rates for car loans, credit cards. People looking to borrow are very discouraged. That's reflected in their views on the economy. What would you say to them?
Well, the thing that hurts everybody, and particularly people
is inflation.
In the lower income brackets,
is inflation.
Is inflation. Okay. If you're a person who's earning paycheck to paycheck, and suddenly all the things you buy, the fundamentals of life go up in price, you are in trouble right away. And so with those people in mind in particular, what we're doing is we're using our tools to bring down inflation. It will take some time, but we will succeed, and we will bring inflation back down to 2%, and then people won't have to worry about it again. That's what we're doing, and we know that it's painful and inconvenient, but the dividends will be paid will be very large, and everyone will share in those dividends. And we've made quite a lot of progress, if you can think about it. Headline core PCE peaked at 5.8. Now it's at, anyway, headline peaked at 7.1. Now it's at 2.7. Don't want to get that wrong.
No, you don't. Quick follow-up. Are current interest rates really doing that much, though, to fight inflation right now for those consumers?
Yes. I mean, I think that restrictive monetary policy is doing what it's supposed to do. But it's also, in this case, unusually working alongside and with the healing of the supply side. This that was different this time was that a big part of the source of the inflation, and the reason why we're having this conversation, is that we had this supply side kind of collapse with shortages and bottlenecks and all that kind of thing.
I think this is the only channel in the whole world that watches meme coins while Powell is actually speaking on the FOMC, because we're just a fucking bunch of degens. I mean, we're proud of it. Don't get me wrong. We're proud of the fact that we're degens. But we're the only channel in the world that while Powell is speaking on the FOMC and everyone's watching the Bitcoin charts, we're watching Gummy and we're watching Tucker. Yeah. Dill, what are you seeing in the charts while Powell's talking? What are you seeing in the charts?
Yeah, basically, I was saying earlier today on my show, it's very simple. We were looking for a bounce here. There were multiple reasons why we thought we were going to get a bounce on these charts. And, you know, my view is that I'm sort of short-term still bearish. So I have the same sentiment that you have at the moment. I'm still looking for lower. This is my two-day chart that I'm watching at the moment. So for me, we're in a downtrend. So when you're in a downtrend, you're looking to sell any pumps and things like that. I'm basically just looking for something along these lines. There's your little spot there, 49. 48, somewhere around there. I think we can get it.
I think we're due for a short-term bounce. I think this could actually be the short-term bounce, to be honest. Let's just see. There is more coming through. Let's just see what's going on.
So essentially, there are there are a number of places in the economy where there's a, where there are just lag structures built into the inflation process, and housing is one of them. So when you have when a new person goes to rent an apartment, that's called market rent, and you can see market rents are barely going up at all. The inflation in those has been very low. But it takes before that they were incredibly high. They sort of led the high part. So what happens is those market rents take years actually to get all the way into rents for tenants who are rolling over their leases. The landlords don't tend to charge as much of an increase to a rollover tenant for whatever reason. And what that does is it builds up a sort of an unrealized portion of increases when there have been big increases. And what happens is, you know, it's complicated, but the story is it just takes some time for that to get in. Now, I am confident that as long as market rents remain low, this is going to show up in measured inflation, assuming that, that market rents do remain low. What will be the exact timing of it? I think we've learned that the lags are longer. We now think significantly longer than we thought at the beginning. And so confident that it will come, but not so confident in the timing of it. But yes, I expected that that this will happen.
Thanks.
Thank you, Chair Powell, for taking the questions. This is Nicholas Jasinski from Barron's Magazine. It seems that over the past 3 or 4 years, economies and central banks in developed markets, at least, have been on more or less the same trajectory, easing during the pandemic, fighting inflation with restrictive policy on the way out. Feels like that may be ending in 2024 based on some of the economic data from Europe and the US and Japan and statements from those central banks as well. So my question is, what considerations or risks does a period of more divergent global economic trajectories and central bank policies present for the FOMC?
So you're right. I think that may happen. And I know that we all serve domestic mandates, right? So I think the difference between the United States and other countries that are now considering rate cuts is that they're just not having the kind of growth we're having. They have their inflation is performing about like ours or maybe a little better, but they're not experiencing the kind of growth we're
experiencing. One thing he hasn't spoken about is he hasn't spoken about Japan. I wonder if he's going to speak about Japan.
A strong labor market, very low unemployment, high job creation, and all of that. And we can be patient, and we'll be careful and cautious as we approach the decision to cut rates, whereas I think other jurisdictions may go before that. In terms of the implications, I think obviously markets see it coming. It's priced in now. And so I think the economy, markets and economies can adapt to it. And I think, we haven't seen, in addition for the emerging market economies, we haven't seen the kind of turmoil that was more frequent 20 years ago, 30 years ago. And that's, I think, partly because emerging market countries, many of them have much better monetary policy frameworks, much more credibility on inflation. And so they're navigating this pretty well this time.
Jennifer.
Let's see how Tucker is.
Thank you, Chair Powell. Jennifer Schonberger with Yahoo Finance. You sort of backed away from the notion that the economy would need to encounter pain for inflation to come back down. But given sticky inflation data in the first quarter, can disinflation still happen along a relatively painless path for the economy? Or is some softening in the labor market and the economy likely needed to bring inflation back down?
So you're right. I think we thought and most people thought there would have to be probably a significant dislocations somewhere in the economy, perhaps the labor market, to get inflation all the way down from the very high levels it was at the beginning of this episode. That didn't happen. That's a tremendous result. We're very, of course, gratified and pleased that that hasn't happened. And if you look at the dynamics that enabled that, it really was that so much of the gain was from the unwinding
of dominance,
things that weren't to do with monetary policy, but the unwinding of the distortions to the economy, supply problems, supply side problems, and also some demand issues as well. The unwinding of those really helped inflation come down. Now, as I've said, I'm not giving up on that. So I think it is possible that those forces will still work to help us bring inflation down. We can't be guaranteed that that's true, though. And so,
I think we're not going to get much more out of Powell.
The labor market strong and the economy strong, but also helps bring inflation back down to 2% sustainably. We will bring inflation down to 2% sustainably. We hope we can do it without,
Let's give him one more question.
Dislocations in the labor market or elsewhere.
And speaking of dislocations in the labor market, in terms of cutting, you said if there were weakness in the job market, that could be a reason to cut rates. So if the unemployment rate were to tick above 4%, but inflation not back down to your 2% target, how would you look at that? Would the unemployment rate popping back above 4% catch your attention?
You know, I said an unexpected weakening is the way I characterize it. So, you know, I'm not going to try to define exactly what I mean by that, but you know, it had to be meaningful and get our attention and lead us to think that the labor market was really significantly weakening for us to want to react to it. A couple of tenths in the unemployment rate would probably not do that, but it would be a broader thing that would suggest that it would be appropriate to consider cutting. And I think whether you decide to cut will depend on all the facts and circumstances, not just that one.
Chair Powell, thanks for taking the question. Kyle Campbell with American Banker. You've said that broad and material changes are needed for the Basel III endgame proposal. And
okay, so I think we're not going to get very much more out of Powell. Long story short. So I think all in all, the market kind of reflects what Powell said. It's dovish, but we're not completely bullish. He has ruled out rate cuts. He says we're not around, there's not going to be stagflation. So that's given the market some confidence. You can see Bitcoin spiked up to 59.3. Now it's back at 58.3. Let's quickly look at the bubbles, Banta bubbles. Sort of show you guys a few things. The first thing is all this information was actually live and available here in the newsroom. So as our amazing research team sees the information, they're dropping it live in the newsroom. Also, you can watch it on the 1 minute bubble. So this is like the 1 minute performance, which really gives you a time frame of how the market's reacting. Before we go into charts, I do want to just quickly speak about Gummy. A lot of you guys have got questions about Gummy. So the first thing is, if you're losing your points here, it means that you're not looking at your computer for 7 days or something like that, right? And so basically, we want people that are actually using the app. So just keep looking at your app, closing it, opening your app, etc. Second thing is, we still have $30 million of Gummy to give away, at least $30 million of Gummy to give away at these prices. So how do you get Gummy? One that you can still do, you can sign up to Kyle's Whale School. We extended it by 1 week. So you got 6 more days to sign up to Kyle's Whale School. If you do, not only do you get an amazing, amazing, amazing Whale School, but you also get free Gummy. Then if you sign up to Bybit and if you sign up to Blowfin and you deposit $100 into either Bybit or Blowfin, you get yourself Gummy. Anyone that signs up and deposits gets Gummy, no questions asked. Sign up to Evo and farm on Banta Bubbles. Those are the 5 ways. Guys, you have to hurry up. So you got to deposit your money into Bybit. So sign up with Bybit, sign up with Blowfin quickly and deposit your money because you never know when the airdrop's going to come. There's $30 million to be airdropped, $30 million. Also, you do have 6 more days to enter Kyle's Whale School, guys. And it is an amazing, amazing, amazing Whale School. Don't delay. Just go and fucking do it. Anyway, now let's quickly look. Let's go to Dylan. Dylan, let's quickly look at the charts with you. What are we seeing in the charts?
Okay, so we've had a little trend break, nice dovish information there, the market little move, a little bit of a squeeze, that type of thing. But all we've done now is ping the resistance that our support from yesterday. So the support we were longing yesterday, this little bounce zone that you can see up here, we've now lost that. And now all we've done is push back and ping that as resistance. So we just need to be cautious here. If you're looking for longs now, you're looking for longs into a big resistance zone. I've got the 100-day moving average here. I've got this major support. This was big support for us for 2 months. Okay, it's going to be quite tricky just to blow through that. So let's see how this goes. Now we've got a trend break on the 15 minutes. What do you want now? If you're bullish, you're looking for a little retest here. You're looking for buyers in these type of pullback zones. These are bullish pullback zones. So if you're a bull now, 58, 200, you can look for something here. If you're a bull, 57, 700, you can look for something there and, maybe a little bit of a continuation. But my question is, well, I was asking it to earlier on my show as well. Is this move sustainable? And I think we're in a big trend.
How do you feel about this RSI, the stochastic RSI being under 20? How do you feel about it's
on the weekly?
Yes,
are you looking at weekly? Yeah, so I mean, the weekly can stay at the bottom for 2-3 weeks. If you go through the charts, there's situations where it's bottomed out on the weekly and then you've got a 15% dump still. So a lot of the action happens when that thing hits the bottom. But if you're buying spot, does it matter? You know, 15% dump on top of what you have there, does it actually matter? I don't think so. If you're trading leverage or margin, slightly different game plan, I'd say. But yeah, I mean, these things are very settled down at the bottom.
What the hell?
What's up, guys? You see the future. Market's pumping.
What the hell was that? What is actually going on here?
He's bullish. He's bullish. If he wears those, he's bullish.
Bro, what are you on?
No, you and wear those.
I mean, what are you on? Where can I get some if I'm currently in Miami in the United States?
It's down the street. 10 minutes away, to be honest.
Are you farming gummy with Apple Vision Pros on, bro?
Yes, I do. It's pretty cool because the app works in the Vision Pros. So if you guys have Vision Pros, jump on Banter Bubbles.
All right, Dylan, carry on. So let's look at dominance. I want to look at dominance quickly before we go.
Yeah. I want to show you something interesting as well. Okay, so dominance, yeah. Dominance on in a support band now. So we just need to be a little bit careful. I mean, they've been very kind to the alts today. Yeah. I mean, this has been nice. You know, it's been very nice. If you're trading alts today, you didn't get killed.
Isn't it nice?
Wait, check this. I figured something. Look at this.
What's
it's
that?
Nice.
Isn't nice?
I figured that out the other day. I can't stop doing it. It's the best. Okay, so dominance, potential bounce coming here on dominance. Just keep a lookout for that. If Bitcoin is pumping and dominance starts bouncing, not so bad. If Bitcoin's falling over and dominance starts pumping, then you might need a second pair of undies, basically, because it could get spicy out there.
Okay, cool. So listen, guys, I think all in all, a little bit of reprieve. We know that Powell's not increasing rates. We know that the stochastics are down. We know that there's been a nice bounce in the 1 hour. This is the 1 hour on the altcoins. Although the daily mixed bag, but mainly green, I think something that we actually needed. I think very, very good. I told you, I thought that the FOMC would change the thing. I think it did. Before we go, just remind you again, if you want to get your gummy airdrop, there is $30 million. Here it is. It's all underneath here. So number one, if you want to watch the big debate that I'm doing, just click on that link over there, get the debate. If you want to get gummy, sign up for Kyle's Whale School, sign up to Bybit, deposit $100, sign up to Blowfin, deposit $100. And you will get yourself free gummy regardless. If you sign up to Blowfin and Bybit, you get yourself double free gummy. If you sign up to Blowfin, Bybit, and Car School, you get yourself triple gummy. If you sign up to Blowfin, every one of those is more gummy. It's just more gummy for everyone. So I will probably see you guys again tomorrow because you can see I'm addicted to streaming. And even when I'm not supposed to be streaming, here I am. Until then, brothers and sisters, trade well, my friends. Thank you, D.
Later.